Thank you. I'm going to share the results of a study that we did last year in May 2014. And the purpose of the study was really to get a feel for the landscape of syndromic surveillance at the time among state health departments. I want to make that distinction. This is strictly among state health departments, although Washington, D.C. is often counted as a state health department, so it's actually 51 jurisdictions. And this was done at a time when a lot of work was being done with BioSense and ISDS and other partners were doing a lot to help work with syndromic surveillance practitioners to identify some of the things that they were doing and that they needed. Rosa's talk this morning was talking about one of the work groups that was formed at this time. So I think one thing to keep in mind when looking at this is that this work and the results that people gave were really things that could be used as baseline data before a lot of work, and so can be very valuable for changing progress on some of the goals we have. And the idea was that they would continue to inform capacity building assistance by ISDS, CDC, and others. And again, talking about the context that this was being done in, we always try to align priorities. And at the 2014 ISDS conference, Dr. Chesley Richards spoke about the CDC surveillance strategy, which had recently been rolled out. And the goal there, simply stated, as he put it, was to basically have good data for informed decision making. In the right data and information, in the right hands, at the right time, in the right format to take action. And syndromic surveillance is an important part of helping to meet this goal. The survey itself was an electronic survey sent out to the primary contact responsible for syndromic surveillance in the 50 states and DC. We actually had 100% response rate. We had 51 responses, and a lot of that is due to the great outreach of Tara Reynolds, who was on our staff at the time, to really reach back to everyone. I do want to say, though, that not all of the surveys were fully completed, so we can't say we had a perfect response the response rate was 100%, but we didn't have full answers to all the questions. And the responses at the time, and I'll show you this picture, was that at the time, this was in May, at the time there were 10 state jurisdictions that said that they did not use syndromic surveillance at all. And there were 10 that said that they used BioSense only. And then there were others that said that they had their own system. And I think that I'm going to present an updated graph, but I believe that Ralph in the next talk will present more information about this, who's conducting syndromic surveillance. One thing to point out here, to just the type of things that we see over time, if you see here, Idaho last year was not conducting syndromic surveillance, and nor was California at the state level. This graph just shows, as of May 2015, the jurisdictions that had signed DUAs with ASTO, and we see that now Idaho has signed a DUA and is beginning to do syndromic surveillance. And in California, although the state is still not participating in syndromic surveillance, there are actually 13 local jurisdictions that have signed DUAs and are participating in BioSense. So if you think about the characteristics of the syndromic surveillance in the different states, you know, it's really important to know what's in the data. What we found is that the size of the jurisdictions varies quite a bit, that you could have from 2 to 173 ED facilities in a jurisdiction. So first of all, that tells you, when you're thinking about what you could do to perhaps help them, is that one size is not going to fit all, that people have very different needs based on the number of ED facilities, their stage of onboarding, which is, again, a dynamic thing. Unfortunately, it's not always new hospitals coming on board. There's also hospitals that go offline for various reasons. And then the population covered. And from this, we can think about the types of recommendations. And for each of these, I've put a couple recommendations. And actually, at the end of my talk, I have questions for you about what other things you think might be piqued in your mind based on these results. But one thing that is clear is that it's really important to keep track of metadata, the data about your data, because things do change over time, and if you're looking at trends over time, you need to really understand what's in your data. And again, as was mentioned in a previous session about data quality is such an important part of syndromic surveillance, and it also is very critical to the idea of data sharing. So when we think about how people are using syndromic surveillance, although syndromic surveillance was initially... was originally really thought of as something for outbreak detection, what we're finding now, and based on the survey, was that more are reporting that they're using it for trend analysis and situational awareness during an emergency. And they find it especially useful for ad hoc analysis. Something's happening and they go back and look at their data. Now this sort of underscores the value of syndromic surveillance, and as I said in a roundtable earlier, I think it's really important to remember that syndromic surveillance is not a special kind of data. It's data that's already being recorded, being collected in electronic health records, and then it's just being used for syndromic surveillance in a way that it doesn't require things to be pre-sorted ahead of time. Also, when we think about what people are using it for, traditionally the top three ways that people have used syndromic surveillance is for influenza surveillance, GI illness, as we just heard, and environmental health surveillance, particularly around extreme heat and cold conditions. At the time, when we asked people whether they felt it was useful or not, 21% felt that it was not useful for chronic disease surveillance. So, you know, you can look at that as two ways of 80% think that it could be used for chronic disease surveillance, which really is a new thing, or do you work with the 21% that don't quite see it yet? So when we think about the utility, you know, we now know that local and state health departments are using syndromic surveillance in a number of ways, many of which are listed up here. And this comes from also a more recent local health survey that we've done. So what this says is that syndromic surveillance can be used for many things. Sorry about that. And that what we can be doing is working more to help people that are doing it help others. Sorry. Now, most people are using emergency departments as their source of data. And really, syndromic surveillance is about emergency department. I'm sorry, I'm like losing my voice a little bit. But we see others are also using it for urgent care. And more recently, there's been a lot of discussion about using it for ambulatory care visits. And some people are just starting to do that. And a lot of this is in response to the meaningful use regulations and others that are incentivizing healthcare providers to send their data. But there's also other ways that people were using it but not monitoring it as frequently, whether it's from EMS or poison or other things. When we think about syndrome definitions, 96% of the people were using chief complaints in a free text format, which really underscores the importance of looking and retaining the use of free text. Now many vendors and many are transferring over to using drop-down menus, which raises a number of different problems, because in some ways it creates standards which may make it easier, but we've also heard reports of how it gets involved in the business processes where sometimes the nurse, you know, she might pick the first thing that looks good. Not to disparage nurses. And also, that there is a lot of sharing of how people use syndrome definitions. It's funny, I've been talking now. Maybe it's because I've been talking all day. I'm losing my voice now. Anyway, again, about data quality is a critical thing that we really need to ensure that everyone has some systems in place for monitoring data quality. And there's a lot of work being done to identify the tools. With regard to data sharing, what this study found then is that people were a lot more ready to share aggregate data than visit level data. And this is something that we've known, and it's been a little bit of a barrier to data sharing, and that one of the recommendations are to look at ways and situations where we could perhaps share aggregate data, and also to keep track of this to monitor ongoing practice on progress in data sharing. And ISDS has been doing a bit with regional data sharing workshops, and what we find is one of the first steps for data sharing is to just get people to meet one another and know who else is in their region, who is in their neighboring states, who are the people to contact. With regard to facilitators and barriers, the number one reason people said they didn't use syndromic surveillance was they do not recognize the value of syndromic surveillance. And we've known for a while that a lot of work has to be done to really demonstrate to decision makers how syndromic surveillance is an important part of the surveillance enterprise, and that there are certain factors that can have both positive and negative impacts. The states where they have regulations that say, you know, you have to, that healthcare has to send data to public health, those are the ones that often have the most complete systems, whereas there are others that for example, this one that says the DUA, that our legal counsel developed limits data sharing to aggregate data. So again, sometimes there are upstream reasons that make it hard to share data. And meaningful use also has been, it has incentivized a lot of people to participate. Others have said that it slowed down. With the proposed changes in meaningful use, which we hope don't go through, that would change syndromic surveillance from a required to a menu item for meaningful use, could possibly have big implications on people that are doing it, or that is sending data just because they have to. And then just a little bit about the use of BioSense 2.0 by state health departments at the time. Again, this is just a snapshot that looks at the state of onboarding at different times. And a year ago, it's 9 of the 29, were really just very early. I think if we looked at this now, it'd be quite different. Again, just about how they use BioSense, if you look at the which bar is the biggest, which color is the biggest, for both using the front end, which has the analytics, and the back end, which is the data repository, you know, people are pretty much using it on an ad hoc basis. But even since this time, a year ago, a lot of great work has been done to improve the system, largely in response to the requests of the community of practice and the great work that the governance group and CDC have been doing. And so I just want to say this, so what I've done here is present a little bit about the landscape of practice, some of the baselines, and then what are some of the recommendations to inform effective capacity building assistance. Some of the next steps in response to the recommendations from the data are ongoing assessment. We need to set goals, and it goes back to the old adage, that which gets measured gets done. You know, we are at a time where we're investing a lot of time and energy into helping practitioners to improve their syndromic surveillance systems. So I think by setting goals, we can monitor progress and show return on investment. We also need to do more of collaboration with data providers. We've heard a lot about onboarding and getting healthcare providers to send their data. A lot of it, again, is setting up the relationships, making sure the data quality and the expectations are explicit, and to identify regulations that facilitate data exchange. You know, if North Carolina can do it, maybe anybody can do it. And then also there's a real need for knowledge management. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's so much information, and the collective energy of the communities of practice are you know, there's so much among the community, and we're very fortunate, ISDS and my team, we get to work with these great people doing syndromic surveillance, and many of them have success stories, and again, we need to tap into their experience and their priorities in order to provide workforce development and trainings geared to the needs that people have, and to continue this work through funded work plans. This is just a closing thought by Amy Ising, who is currently president of ISDS and the director of the NC Detect, in that syndromic surveillance is a partnership, not a project that has a beginning and an end. And I think that sums up a lot of the work. I want to say thanks to the survey respondents and everyone that worked on this. Thank you very much.